your attention, please.
Synchronize your watches.
I don't know how to do that.
I don't wear a watch.
I thought I was losing my mind. What the heck? Is that Pete?
Here's Pete McMurray on 720 WGN.
It is Pete McMurray on this Saturday morning in for John Williams, who's hanging out with Teddy Roosevelt at 10:30 today. So it was nice enough for John to let me do his show today. Joe Brand in sports. Joe, the Cardinals got beat.
Oh, they got beat. They didn't get beat bad, but they got silenced offensively.
They did. But don't ever count the Cardinals out.
No.
I can't believe they're back in the NLCS. I just can't believe it.
It's so Cardinals with what they did, you know?
Now, I hate the Red Sox. I can appreciate the Yankees, 27 World Championships, but the Cardinals have to be one of the best franchises in baseball. If you're a Cub fan and you hate the Cardinals still, you have to agree.
They're the best National League baseball team. What is it, 11 World Championships?
I can't believe it.
Hats off to them. I mean, they take down a very good Braves team, and boy, that series was fantastic until the last game of it, where 10 runs in the first inning. I turned it on. I'm like, is this score bug wrong? This can't be right.
I saw it on Twitter. I go, this has got to be a typo. Nobody scores 10 runs in the first inning.
My fiance came home.
Playoffs.
She was like, oh, I was really hoping to get some work done and watch my shows. I'm like, you can watch whatever you want. This game is over.
Yes, it's completely over. The marathon is happening tomorrow. Carrie Pinkowski, the executive director, is going to join us at 11:35. If you're thinking about coming downtown to watch the marathon, he's going to tell you where to go, what you can see. There's already people downtown, all over downtown. They're picking up their packages right now. The marathon runners have the medal around their neck. Did you guys see that this morning, Ben? Behind the glass, Ben is producing today. Did you see that walking in today?
There we go. I did. Yeah,
you're shaking
it's
your
different.
Head.
Yeah, it's different.
I saw 10 people in front of the building wearing the medal. They shouldn't get the medal until the end of the race.
Yeah, isn't that customary?
You would think. I don't. Maybe it's a medal from last year. I don't know. We're going to talk marathon at 11:35. We're also going to talk pizza. Who doesn't love pizza? Lou Malnati's is moving into the historic Wrigley building, and Mark Malnati is going to come by at 11:05. They're working on it today. The grand opening is happening next week. Is there any other building in Chicago that is more Chicago than the Wrigley building? Maybe Marina Towers and the Wrigley building go hand in hand? Anything you guys can think of? When you think of Chicago, you think of Marina Towers, you think of the Wrigley building. I mean, you don't think of the Willis Tower.
I think of
the Sears Tower.
I think of the Sears Tower as well.
You
yes.
don't. Come on, Maple. Really? When they show the skyline?
Yeah, that's what I think of. Either that or the Hancock building.
The Willis Tower and the Hancock building are so nondescript. I mean, you look at the Wrigley building, you say, that's Chicago.
I digress.
Or Marina Towers. I mean, that's Chicago right there. The shot of Marina Towers with the river.
What right about the there. Tribune Tower?
No. No.
I don't think. Well, think of people out of town. When they see the pictures of Chicago, the Wrigley building, it's like, oh, that's Chicago. Or Marina Towers, that's Chicago. Yeah.
Yeah, but you could still throw the Willis Tower and Hancock in there.
For sure.
Maybe.
Hipster Pete.
Maybe. So, well, we're gonna talk pizza at 11:05. Dr. Oz, I talked to him on Thursday. We're going to play it back at 10:35 because if you're a parent like me, I have a 14-year-old son, Charlie McMurray. We have to talk to our kids about vaping, and Dr. Oz does not want vaping banned, and he'll explain why. And if you're over 55, you're going to want to listen to Dr. Oz at 10:35 because you need to get a vaccine that most adults have not had, and he will explain. You got to get that. In 2 weeks from today, that's when the Halloween festivities start, right? The 2 weeks from today is October 26th. Halloween is on a Thursday. I'm working that day on the 31st. So you got a week of Halloween because people are going to have parties on November 1st and probably on November 2nd. So we're doing an entire week of Halloween. Does everybody have their costumes ready to go?
I do not. It's more of a hairstyle I'm just going to go with. We were talking off the air. I'm going to a Roaring Twenties wedding on the 26th.
Okay.
So I've got a charcoal suit, and I'm hoping to do maybe the wavy part with the top of my hair on the bangs, like the 20s look.
A wavy part on the top of your hair.
Joe, like, did you just describe Justin Bieber's hair?
No, no.
Can you give me a visual? I can't really.
It looks like waves. The
wavy part.
The bangs on the top of your hair look like waves.
They look like waves.
Yeah, and if I could grow a mustache, I'd do a pencil-thin mustache.
Well, you know, you can do a stick-on mustache.
That's true.
So it's a themed 20s wedding. So it is a costume on the 26th.
It is, but it's not. It's just encouraged. It's not really required.
I love dressing up. I love it. Now you're engaged. You got to do like couples costumes.
Well, a couple years ago, we were French Kiss. So we had berets, scarves, a bottle of wine, and then we did Kiss paint, Kiss face paint, like the band.
All right.
We stole it off the internet.
Not bad. I like that. Not bad. My wife and I have gone as Sonny and Cher. We've gone as Donnie and Marie, which if you think about it, you can intertwine those two. So we did Sonny and Cher one year and used the same costumes for Donnie and Marie the next. And we've gone as Ozzy and Sharon. And this year, I told my wife, and I thought this was a great idea. I came up with this week. Do you remember what happened on Sunday with George W. and Ellen? George W. Bush and Ellen were at the Cowboy game together, and Twitter blew up. So I said, why don't we go as George W. and Ellen DeGeneres?
That's awesome.
That's amazing.
And I go as Ellen. She goes as George W.
Genius.
Even better.
Genius. She hated it. I go, Sarah, this is the costume. This is it. Everybody's going to know.
And if it were like a few months ago, it wouldn't be relevant. That is awesome.
Yes, I think so. Is it going to hold up for 2 weeks? I think. Yeah. We'll be at a party on the 26th. Maple, do you have a costume?
I actually don't celebrate Halloween.
What do you mean? You're the only person on the planet that doesn't celebrate Halloween.
Well, my family too, so.
I don't understand. Why not?
It's due to religious reasons.
What religion? I've never heard of this.
Yeah, really? I'm a Jehovah's Witness.
They don't celebrate Halloween?
We don't celebrate any holidays.
It's not really...
Don't judge. Don't judge.
I am not judging.
Okay.
I'm just trying to understand.
Not even Flag Day?
Not even Flag Day.
You don't hang any flags outside your house.
I don't.
I'm going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk about the most searched Halloween costume ideas for 2019. According to Google, Donald Trump not on the list. Nancy Pelosi not on the list. You're going to be surprised. We'll do that next on 720 WGN. Pete McMurray in for John Williams, who is with Teddy Roosevelt this Saturday morning. Getting text messages in, 312-981-7200 is our phone number. By the way, we can get pictures via text message because it comes up on a computer screen in front of me, and there's two guys that dressed as a woman. Joe, I don't know if you can see this on the screen, but I don't really know how to describe it, but that could be the greatest costume ever.
It might be. They both have guts, and they use their
guts
beer bellies together to look like a physical feature of a woman.
Yes, very good. And thank you for that description.
Each man is wearing
half of a bikini top.
There you go.
If that makes sense.
Piece together.
219, we were talking about you're going to a roaring 20s party. You can draw on a pencil-thin mustache. You don't have to grow one.
That's a good point.
Yeah, you can do that.
I thought a stick-on one would be a little tacky, but maybe I could get away with a pencil-thin mustache.
I'm thinking Ted Turner from TBS, but black. Is that what you're looking for? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, a little bit, I guess. Did you see the picture I sent you with the hairstyle?
Did you text it to me?
I did. I texted it to you.
Okay.
It's just to get a glimpse of it. I can't think of a person that...
Ah, got it. It's a wavy part.
Okay, yes.
It's a wavy part. Now I have the visual.
I said something like that.
Yeah. Joe, are you going to be looking like Gomez Adams?
That is exactly right. You nailed it, Ben.
I hope it's the hairstyle.
That's exactly what it is. That's what he's going
to
look like.
This is going to be high school all over again when I try to be Willy Wonka and I got confused for Abraham Lincoln, Charlie Chapman, everybody but Willy Wonka.
Ah, that's funny, man. I love it. the most searched Halloween costume ideas for 2019, according to Google. What do you think is number one? think about this year, 2019. What was the biggest thing that people can use to dress up? Nothing to do with politics. Politics, not even in the top 10 searched. Anything?
I'm going blank, just because I feel like everybody's
the
still,
most searched Halloween costume ideas for 2019, the clown from the movie It.
Really?
I hate clowns. I mean, I don't really. I mean, the scary clowns I hate. The clown from the movie It. Just wearing the makeup to a party? I don't think I'd do that. Number two, a witch. Classic.
Traditional.
Okay. Yeah. Spider-Man, number three. You guys ever go out on Halloween wearing a mask?
No.
Mm-hmm. I don't think since I was a kid I've worn a mask.
How do you eat and drink with a mask on?
I think that's the case.
You know, people go to costume stores, they get the Donald Trump mask and they wear that. I don't understand that. First of all, you're going to be sweating your butt off, and then you have to pull it up to eat and drink. It doesn't make sense to me. Okay? Number four, a dinosaur. It's got to be a kid thing.
You know what? I saw a bunch of those last year. You know, it's
dinosaurs?
The giant, like the, yeah, but it's like the big, like, it's inflatable. So there's like a fan that fills it up with air, and you just walk around like this big puffy dinosaur.
Again, I am sweating just thinking about this.
But there's fan. There's air. That's the only way I would do something
just,
like that.
It just seems too antiquated. I mean, just, I don't know. I don't think it would work for me. Number five, Descendants. Do you guys know what that is? Is that a movie?
No, I don't.
Why don't you Google it? Because the most searched Halloween costume ideas for 2019, according to Google. Number six, more clowns. Who's dressing as a clown? Number seven, Fortnite. Okay, I could see that. Number eight, Chucky from Child's Play. Number nine, the 1980s.
the whole decade.
Right. I could just pull out old clothes from the 80s. I know you two are a little younger than me, but yeah. God, I love the 80s. It's fantastic.
Do you have the fishnet shirts and the...
Fishnet shirts? isn't Studio 54.
Well, sorry.
No.
Do you still wear Cavaricci's, Pete?
The Z Cavaricci's. I loved it. And what you guys don't know, maybe you should Google this, is back in the day, you would roll up your pants at the bottom and kind of a tie little deal. Love that.
I still know how to do that.
Love it. And you had the belt that kind of faced down. I didn't really understand that. The leather belt that went downwards. Joe, you have no idea what I'm talking about, do you?
I am totally lost.
Yeah. And the most searched Halloween costume ideas for 2019, a unicorn. None of these interest me. These are your top 10 according to Google.
It seems like it's got to be very heavily child influenced. The Descendants is
unicorn,
some show or something for little kids. Yeah, but a unicorn, that is odd.
I wouldn't dress as a clown.
I just think you would have to go all out to really nail a clown.
The average costume this year, guess how much it costs? $86, the average costume.
What?
If you have a family of four with two kids, which is average, you're going to spend between $250 and $300 on Halloween, and you haven't even done anything yet. So you have two adult costumes that are going to be about $90 each, so that's $180. Then you got to go out and buy candy. How many bags are you going to buy? Two bags, so that's $15, $16. Kids' costumes, $25, so that's $50 right there. So all in, $180, $50, $16, that's $246. And you haven't even done anything yet. You haven't even gone to a bar.
You lazy.
You haven't picked up a bottle of wine to take to a party. You haven't done anything, and you're out $246. God, that's a lot of money. Besides Christmas, Halloween is approaching Christmas when it comes to spending. We are spending so much money on Halloween and Halloween decorations outside. I probably have five houses on my street. People love decorating for Halloween. And they're going all out, man. There was this woman right down the street. I'm not kidding. She has a life-size person laying in her yard and a coyote eating out of the chest of the life-size person with blood coming out. I need to take a picture of it and put it on Twitter. I'm serious. In her front yard. is not a joke. In the city.
Is the coyote moving, or is it just a stationary coyote.
I try to stay away from her house, but I swear to you, I'm going to take a picture and tweet it this afternoon. And Joe, I'll send you a copy.
Yeah, please do.
Coming up after bottom of the hour news, it's Dr. Oz. It's 720 WGN. Our next guest, you can see weekdays on Fox Chicago. He loves this city, and we love him. It's my personal physician. It is Dr. Oz. How are you, sir?
Good, Pete. You're overdue for your prostate exam.
Wait a second. By the way, I do go in for my yearly exam every single year, and people need to do that. I have so many friends, guy friends, that never go in for their yearly exam.
They don't, and they're afraid. And that the reality is you fear most what you don't understand. Mm-hmm. The beautiful thing about medicine these days is we can treat so many of the problems, even life-threatening problems people have, if you have a little bit of a head start. Good example, Bernie Sanders.
Right.
If instead of having his chest pain on the stage in Las Vegas, it's 6 hours later and he's asleep in bed, he probably doesn't even wake up. And if he does, he doesn't want to make a big deal about it and get everyone else up. So instead, he suffers through the evening and then has a big heart attack. Instead, he has all the signs. By the way, he knows he takes his jacket off because he's sweating. He's has the lead on the podium because he's a little dizzy, a little short of breath, all the classic signs that most people don't realize of a heart attack. And because smart people around him, and he is, you know, insightful enough, they go off to the hospital, get it stented. 2 million stents placed a year, by the way, for the 750,000 heart attacks that happen every year. And he just becomes a success story. You know, he's literally walking in the park a couple of days later when he's released from the hospital. Could have been very different.
You had a lot to say on social media about Bernie Sanders. Are you trying to get people to react or look at their own bodies?
Well, I was blessed to have him come visit the show. I'm having all the candidates come on. And he said he was healthy. He played basketball, by the way. And he was a big-time runner when he was younger. He actually won the city championship in New York, or was third, I guess, in the city championship.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, he stayed in shape. But you work hard, you get into your 70s, things sometimes happen. And a lot of people think if they're making all the right lifestyle choices, then they're fine. That's not the case. Part of preventing catastrophic problems is getting tested and screened and being clever about doing that in a timely fashion. And so when someone like Bernie Sanders gets sick and everyone looks up and says, oh, he's going to drop out of the race, this and that, they get all focused in on it. You might take that opportunity to say, no, he's not going to drop out of the race because there's a 95% chance these stents will be functioning just perfectly in a year.
Right.
He didn't have a massive heart attack, but he did have one. He can still go out and live life normally. Unlike when, for example, Eisenhower had a heart attack in the 50s, they put him on bed rest for a couple weeks, and you know, no one could talk to him. We're in a different era. Same for cancer. If one of the candidates was diagnosed with cancer, I wouldn't have him pull out of the race. Like I would never have a patient of mine stop their day job because of a heart problem. I'd always say, listen, your purpose, your vision, your sense of need for what you do is so important. I would not take that away from you. Go keep doing it. Just be smart about some of the risk factors.
Right. We're talking with Dr. Oz. We're in October here in Chicago. You've spent so much time in Chicago, especially doing Oprah's show. You know the weather can go from 75 degrees to 38 degrees overnight. Cold and flu season. How important is it for people to get their flu shots?
Well, if you don't want to line your back for a week trying to recover from the influenza virus, it's probably wise to get a flu shot. And most healthcare practitioners do. Many of us are mandated by either our hospital rules or the states that we work in to get the flu shot because they don't want us spreading the virus from person to person. Is it going to save your life? It depends. You know, if you're weak, you've got other health issues, you're older, yeah, it could. And for those of us who are younger and aren't facing life-threatening complications, usually of the flu virus, I think they're doing a great service by trying to provide a firewall, a blockage system, by getting immunized so we don't pass along the infections. And I always tell folks, listen, I don't want to treat you like chattel. You're smart. Make the wise decision for you and your family.
Right.
In my own family, we have a battle. My wife does not get the flu shot. I do, so I understand what it's like to have those conversations. But I think I win. Long-term, I think I win. I don't get ill. I weather the storms of the winter a little bit more effectively, so I'm happy, and I get them every year.
How does your wife not get a flu shot? You're Dr. Oz. I don't get it.
It's because I'm married to her, like any family.
That is a perfect example of a wife not listening to her husband.
Pete, in my family, the prosecution never rests. She's coming after me. She verbalizes what a lot of people say, which is, when I get the flu, I'm sick for a couple of days. What's the big deal? I'm not going to die from it.
Oh, boy.
Well, unfortunately, people do. By tens of thousands of people die from the flu every year. They happen. They're generally not the healthiest members of the population, but even healthy people get really bad illnesses. So Why go through that?
Then you get other people sick in the meantime. You know, Dr. Oz, my neighbor, we're talking about flu shots. My neighbor just got over shingles. He was in excruciating pain for a month. He was out for about 90 days. He's a contractor, so, you know, he had to get back to work. Do people over 40 need to get that shingles vaccine?
Not over 40, but over 55 to 60, I would. And the shingles vaccine, but just because shingles is chickenpox. So if you had chickenpox as a child, you have that virus still in your system. It's just not making you ill. And it hides. And then something stressful happens. You get older. Your immune system starts to drop off. And then now that virus can reappear along the nerve where it's stored. So usually it rides along what's called the dermatome. It's a horizontal band across your belly or your chest. And it hurts before you see it. And it's bad pain. And once you get it, it's hard to get it to go away. So there is a very effective newer vaccine. There was one before that wasn't quite as effective. This new one's fantastic. And we're recommending it to people, as I mentioned, you know, certainly by the age of 60. And it's something that you can get a shot and, you know, sort of free yourself from that hassle. That's not a small thing. That is really life-changing when you get it.
So do we need to do it every single year for over 55?
No, one time. One time.
One time, that's it.
One-time shot, and you're done.
Okay. So
here's the thought. The same way that you got probably vaccinated as a child and it's, you know, stayed in you for, you know, 50 years, we believe this vaccine will last for the rest of your life. But, of course, you know, we don't know that for sure. Who knows what happens 30 years from now? But the general game plan is get vaccinated once and you're through it.
So this is the vaccine that I see advertised at Walgreens. Come in, get the shingles vaccine. Is that the one?
Yes.
Okay. That's good to know. We're talking with Dr. Oz. I'm going to have you hold on a second. I have a 14-year-old that just started high school this year. I want to talk to you about vaping when we come back, okay?
I'm looking forward to it.
We're talking with Dr. Oz. It's 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Pete McMurray in the Skyline Studios on the phone with us is Dr. Oz. You can check him out weekdays on Fox Chicago. I have a 14-year-old son, Charlie McMurray, who's a freshman in high school this year. We talk to him all the time about vaping and drinking. What can we do as parents, or what can we say as parents to deter our kids from trying the vaping?
Well, a couple of things. First off, most parents don't realize how much our kids listen to us. They actually do. Well studied numerous times. The most powerful voice that a child hears is their parents. They'll never acknowledge it. So we may all listen to you on the radio, but your kid pretends he's not, and he only acknowledges that when he's quizzed about it later on. So here's the message. First off, vaping is better than cigarettes. Tell them the truth, because they know that, and they'll discount what you're saying if they're not hearing the truth. That stated, a third of young people are vaping, and a third of those people will go on to smoking cigarettes. So just because you're vaping doesn't mean you're safe. Once you believe that to get through the day, you need to put something in your body that wasn't there to begin with, in this case, vaping and its products, then you're already creating a psychological addiction, a belief that you're not good enough. And that's an important message that a 14, 15, 16-year-old has to hear. Right. The first question I ask to cigarette smokers is, how old were they when they started smoking? If you start smoking after the age of 20, quitting is a lot easier than if you start smoking before age 20. Because, again, that psychological addiction is no longer part of it. Your brain's matured. You know you're good enough to stop. So if you can at least get that message across, it'll be helpful. And if he delays a couple of years before he starts vaping, you have a much better chance of managing him and the complications of it. Second issue, a lot of the vaping products now are counterfeit. They're produced in other countries.
Right.
They're made illegally. And a recent study just came out this weekend. 100% of the products screened of the counterfeit bootleg products had pesticides in them, which can be very toxic to you. And they also have heavy metals, mercury. Some of them are lined with these fats like vitamin E acetate that form a grease covering in your lungs when they're heated up and you suck them in. It's sort of like having mustard gas poisoning in the First World War.
Oh, my God.
So why would you want to put yourself through that? And especially when you can't tell if it's a legitimate product or not.
Right.
Because the counterfeits look just like the real ones. So I think at least for the next couple of months, zero vaping. Don't risk it. Why make yourself have 80-year-old lungs when you're 15?
Wow, that stat you gave us, if you start smoking before the age of 20, it's much harder to quit. I think of my father-in-law, Chuck, who smoked 4 packs of cigarettes a day, Chesterfields unfiltered. He started when he was 16 years old. Of course, he passed away of cancer, but yeah. I talk to Charlie about that all the time. My father smoked for years until, you know, the mid-70s. My father-in-law smoked until the day he died. It's just, it's terrible.
And I had Dog the Bounty Hunter on. You may have, you know, seen these shows you've been doing with him.
Yes.
And you know, his biggest issue is he smokes, which I think causes blood to clot. Wonderful human being, very bright. Obviously, he chases after folks were running from the law, and now he's sort of running away from me because I'm chasing after him. I mean, I was the dog bounty hunter. And the reason is because he's having trouble stopping his cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. I mean, you start young, he's smoking 3 packs a day. It's very difficult. And I think getting off cigarettes, vaping is a wonderful tool. There's some other good technologies coming down the pike as well. They're used in other countries, like IQOS. There's some good things out there that can help you. But the counterfeit business is destroying these folks. And that's why I don't think we should ban vaping, because if we ban vaping, we're going to shut the good guys down, and only the bad apples are going to be able to bring their products in. So the right thing to do is to regulate it and enforce the law. And if folks are making huge, I mean, this is probably a $10 billion industry.
Right.
And there's a lot of people chasing $10 billion. We're got to protect their own. We got to get smart about this.
Well, you got to educate people, because the vaping is geared towards kids. Cotton candy flavor, really?
And they're shaped like a USB port that a kid might plug into a computer. It's designed to trick parents. You know, this is a bigger story you're wandering into, Peter. I'm glad you brought it up. The fact of the matter is, governments have to say, are these guys a force for good or evil? And they began to think they were a force for evil. They were purposely going after kids. I think the industry's seen that mistake. I think they're trying to fix that problem. And right after that, on that mistake came these counterfeit products that we think are causing the 1,000 hospitalizations and almost 20 deaths now in America. So it's a problem. That's why, even though I'm very upset at what's happening with vaping, I still think we're better off keeping it legal so we can regulate it.
Right.
You need the good guys to help us figure out where the counterfeiters are. Otherwise, we'll never keep ahead of this.
I was talking to my mother last week, by the way. My mother had 12 children, and I said to my mom, I go, Mom, I only have one. Charlie's in high school. I'm starting to worry about the smoking, the drinking, everything. When does the worry stop? And she starts laughing. She said, honey, it never stops, ever.
What a mom, never stops. And, you know, I'll tell you what, not only does the worry not stop, but the joy doesn't stop either.
Yeah,
and the biggest bliss of my adult life has been watching my daughter, Daphne, take the values we tried to give her and try to teach them to her kids, because it reinforces that we did something right. But also, I get not just the joy of having grandkids, but the joy of my daughter having kids.
Right.
Double the joy.
Are you changing your grandkids' diapers?
I have changed their diapers.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I spoil them, though. The best thing about grandkids is you can give them back. So you play.
I
you
knew you were
going to
say that.
And then back they go. And plus, you have a common enemy.
Check them out weekdays on Fox Chicago. Dr. Oz, you are the absolute best. Thanks for coming on tonight.
Love you, my friend. Take care.
It's 720 WGN. Coming up after top of the hour, news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, and we'll talk to Mark Malnati. Lou Malnati's moving into the Wrigley Building right downtown. That's a big deal. That Wrigley Building, there's been nothing in there except Walgreens the last 5 years. This is a big deal happening downtown, so Mark will be in studio. Okay, who gets their flu shots here? Did everybody get their flu shots, Ben?
I don't. I never get one.
Ever?
Ever. I don't get the flu.
Joe Brand?
I honestly think the last time I got one was in WGN when I was an intern, like 6 years ago.
You guys are in the 18 to 49 group. You're the worst group. Only 3 out of 10 get the shot. 6 out of 10 people get the flu shot. That means 40% don't. Who are the 40% at this radio station that don't get the flu shot? I can think of a few right away.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a few.
Well,
guesses.
Wait, here we go. Maple, do you get it?
I actually do, but I haven't gotten it yet.
I have not gotten it yet, and I usually do.
So we need one more person, and then we'll have our 40%.
That is true. It's interesting. What is it? The second week in October? This is when, traditionally, people usually get the flu shot. People were freaking out this year. They started getting their flu shot like the second week in September. I feel like it's going to wear off. Why are you getting it so early?
Is that how it works?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. We should ask Dr. Oz. Who knows? How to avoid the flu. You guys ready? Stay at least 3 feet away from anyone who's coughing or sneezing. Okay, I can do that. Why is it always different at a radio station? You want to talk about people with the worst immune systems on the planet? Radio, we're on the bottom of the list. No radio people take care of themselves.
Well, it's probably because we're all breathing and spitting on the same talking device.
Keep your hands away from your face. My mother always said, don't pick your nose or put your finger in your ear. You won't get sick. So if you touch something, wash your hands before you touch your face. clean communal surfaces at least once a day. Okay, this radio studio has about 25 people in it every single day. Does anybody ever clean in here? We have any bacteria wipes?
Actually, our engineer, Ferg, he does a really good job of that.
Really?
Yeah, when he comes
Did
in.
Did he clean before I came in?
I believe so.
Because I feel like somebody had a cold or a flu yesterday. Wash your hands after touching any surfaces. Okay. Wear surgical gloves when caring for someone who's sick. Honey, I know you're sick. I'm going to put on these gloves just for a few days till you get better. Keep your lips off infected partners. Okay, you don't kiss sick people. Give sick sleeping partners their own pillow and have them sleep on their side. Yeah, I got a big picture of my wife accepting that. Hey, I know you've had the flu for the last 2 days. Can you do me a favor? Just sleep on your side, away from me, across the bed. Can you do that? Mm-hmm. Store your toothbrush out of sight. Okay. Avoid sharing food with infected people. That makes sense. Listen to this. Do your own dishes and do your own laundry.
All right, these sound just like chores now.
Now, hold on a second. Do you want a sick person unloading silverware into the drawer?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Do you want a sick person folding your shirt?
I'm okay with clothes, but I get the silverware part.
I'm not okay with any of this. If you're sick, stay away from me.
Right.
I like how. Don't look at my toothbrush.
But, you know, you have sick people. They're like, I got to get to work. I got to make a living. There's people that, if they don't go to work, they don't get paid.
It's unfortunate, but if you're sick, stay home.
If you're a parent and you have a big presentation and your kid's sick, are you going to give him some Tylenol and send him to school? Absolutely. As all good parents do. Sometimes we have to do that. Oh, please, stop judging. Am I the only parent on this show? Am I the only guy that has a kid at this radio station today? Okay. And get sleep. How important is sleep? It's very, very important. How many people get 8 hours of sleep on this show? Anybody?
Right here.
No way.
I'm so serious.
You're kidding me.
I'm not kidding. If I don't get sleep, I'm a very cranky person.
Mabel, I think you're the only person in this radio station.
I think the last time I had 8 hours sleep with Clinton was president. I want to say 96, 95, 96. 8 hours sleep, that's your deal.
It is.
Wow.
9:30, 10 o'clock at the latest.
You're very disciplined.
I am.
Wow. Joe Brand? I know Ben's answer because he works at a bar. Okay?
I'm the worst sleeper. I just cannot fall asleep for the life of me. Once I fall asleep, I can stay asleep, but I am terrible at sleeping.
Does anybody use the meditation app to fall asleep, put on some headphones? People have suggested that, and I just don't have the attention span.
Yeah.
Turn on Jimmy Kimmel. Maybe that'll put me to sleep, or Nightline after that. Yeah. Ben, how much sleep did you get last night?
I think it was about 3.5 hours.
And where were you?
Working at a bar.
You were working at a bar.
Yep.
Security.
Yep.
The name of the bar that I've been drunk at 100 times?
Lamplighter's Inn.
Lamplighter.
Yep.
Palatine.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. How are they doing?
Actually, pretty good.
When was the last time you had 8 hours sleep?
Ooh, good question.
Here's the problem.
Monday. I think that was it.
You and Joe Brand need to pay attention. If you're not getting enough sleep, you need to get the flu shot. Because your immune system's going to be down. You need to do that. Trust me, I want everybody to remember this conversation, and we will revisit sometime in January.
Honestly, I'll try anything. I really will.
How about a cold? Do you get a cold?
I get a cold here and there, but everyone gets a cold.
Yeah.
True story.
Yeah.
Any vitamins?
Every day.
Look at Maple. Do you get sick, Maple? 8 hours sleep and she takes her vitamins and doesn't celebrate Halloween.
I'm a germaphobe, so I stay away from people who are sick.
All right. Coming up, we're going to talk pizza right after the top of the hour. It's 720 WGN.
Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town. Chicago, Chicago, I will show you around.
Pete McMurray in for John Williams in the Skyline Studios. I love our next guest because he makes people happy. There's no pizza more Chicago than Lou Malnati's, and there's no building more Chicago than the Wrigley Building, and now the two are merging. Lou Malnati's moving into the Wrigley Building this week. Joining us in studio is owner Mark Malnati. It's great to see you.
Great to see you, Pete.
I feel like every time you've been on the show, you're on the phone because you're hustling everywhere, man. You're just running around.
Yeah, well, it's a good act, isn't it?
How long in the making to get Lou's down here in the Wrigley Building?
Boy, we started talking to him about it 5 years ago.
Really?
It was forgotten space, and someone had tipped me off about it. And when I first walked in, it looked like there had been a tornado or two that ran through it.
Right.
You know, and war damage, something. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, I think we need to be here. And my partners looked at me like I was crazy. But, you know, it's obviously Maine in Chicago. It's the ideal location.
And right.
The question was, if we located in the basement, could we get enough signage to even get anybody to realize we were down there? But we're right next to the Sienna's family selling cheeseburger at Billy Goat. And,
yep.
And
talk about two Chicago iconic restaurants.
Right. It's going to be beautiful.
The Wrigley Building, I've said it a million times, my favorite building in Chicago. You got the Wrigley Building, you got Marina Towers. That is Chicago to me. The Wrigley Building had nothing in it for years. I mean, a few office buildings, but you'd walk past that front window, you would see trash in the front window. There was really no reason to walk into that building. And finally, I mean, Walgreens came in about 5 years ago, but finally we get a restaurant in there.
How about that?
Yeah.
Well, most restaurants can't afford the rent that they wanted. And that's why we chose the basement, because certainly we couldn't be right up, you know, on the precipice of Michigan Avenue.
Right.
You know, if we could have an entrance a few feet back, you know, sort of like the Purple Pig did down the street, we figured maybe we could draw them. You know, in the era of GPS and social
right.
media.
Yeah, you don't need anything. Yeah, you just punch it into your phone and it'll tell you where to go.
Right.
How long has Lou's been around? Early 70s? What year?
1971.
So, 1971.
Right, so almost 50 years.
So did you start, do you remember your first day? When was it?
I do. I remember my first day. It was March 17th of 1971, St. Patrick's Day. And my parents chose to open an Italian restaurant in a Jewish neighborhood on an Irish holiday.
Nice.
You know, it was like a United Nations convention.
But that seems so Chicago, though, doesn't it?
Perfect. Couldn't have done it any better.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, I think that the story that that I remember, though, is that after my dad left being the general manager of Uno and Due and Sukasa for 22 years, his initial desire was to open on Michigan Avenue. And he, along with another restaurateur named Bill Contos, who had the most famous French restaurant in Chicago called Chez Paul for years, we're going to open a restaurant together at 625 North Michigan and compete with, you know, his old bosses at Uno and Due, actually with my grandfather. And I think, you know, he was really excited about that for a minute and then found a better location in Lincolnwood and thought, you know, it'll be better to bring it to the suburbs than to try to go head to head.
Right. Probably, you know, start out the restaurant in Lincolnwood and see how it goes and then move downtown.
Right. Now, as we've established the brand, it's more than ready for prime time.
So Lincolnwood, the first Lou Malnati's, what was number two?
Elk Grove Village.
Okay. When did you finally move down in the city of Chicago?
It was 1986.
86. Okay.
Yeah. First time. We had a store in city on Wells Street in River North area. And it was, River North was, I don't know. I mean, it looked like the West Loop maybe 15 years ago. It had been Skid Row as well. And I had a friend, Jimmy DeRose, own a building there and said, you know, Mark, why don't you come and take a look at this? We'll kiss you into the deal. We'll help you build it out. But we need a restaurant on the first floor of our little office building. And we went ahead and did it. And, you know, we have a basement kitchen and, you know, eventually we were able to buy the building and now we have dining rooms on the first and second floor and seat probably 240 people. But it crept along. I mean, there were days when we did maybe $200 in sales when we first opened.
Oh, wow.
They did repairs on the L and they closed Wells Street down and we were at the end, like the end of a cul-de-sac and right. No one could find us for a while. But, you know, after that ended and we started getting the word out. You know, it was our desire to really compete downtown after we had established ourselves, you know, in the northern and northwest suburbs.
Sure, of course.
And so over the last 10 years especially, we've opened a few stores downtown to really try to become the preeminent name in pizza in Chicago.
Well, it's Chicago and Lou's go hand in hand. They really do.
Well, thank you.
I mean, what has changed? We're talking with Mark Malnati, the owner of Lou Malnati's. What has changed? I mean, was it a gut thing in the early days? Okay, we think this neighborhood is up and coming. Let's think about it. Now you probably have a research and development team and have all this research. But back in the day, you just had to go with your gut.
Yeah, it was pretty much gut. But I did find a person who worked for a Big 8 accounting firm. And she was a consultant that did nothing but help with site selection. And her name was Christy Fowler. And after we bombed out in Flossmoor with our third restaurant, and my dad died right after he had opened the store, and we weren't doing any sales, and I wound up closing the store, I got a hold of Christy Fowler and made her teach me everything she knew about site selection. And between my partner Stu Cohn and I, we, you know, it was a lot of gut, but we did have, you know, but besides instincts, we had Christy's knowledge, and we'd take her around and show her sites and, you know, tell us what's good about this, tell us what's bad about
right.
it. So we made ourselves learn, because it's painful to close a restaurant.
Oh, I'm sure.
Right.
Yeah.
It's more than painful.
I mean, besides the finances, think about all the people that you're paying that are losing their jobs. Yeah. That's got to be rough stuff.
It is. It's hard given that message.
Mark Malnati in studio with us. Lou's opening on Michigan Avenue in the Wrigley Building. When do you open?
We open in about 45 minutes.
They're opening today in 45 minutes.
Right.
I'm going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk some more about Lou Malnati's. It's 720 WGN. In studio with us is the owner of Lou Malnati's Pizza, Mark Malnati, and we have to mention that Lou's in the Wrigley Building opens Tuesday at 4 p.m. Open to the public Tuesday at 4 p.m. I love the fact that you're doing the legwork before the restaurant opens. That's why you're downtown today.
Absolutely. Well, we live downtown, my wife Jeannie and I. We live just east, and we love to, you know, be around our downtown stores, and this is extremely exciting,
right?
To be part of this. So today we'll have our soft opening, and tomorrow as well. We'll take a day off on Monday, and then we'll hit the ground running on
Tuesday.
Oh
boy, people are going to show up. Yeah. I mean, all the businesses, people are going to head over there.
I hope so.
It's nice. Your brother Rick. Here's a question for you. Give me an answer. Is he a better basketball player, a better basketball coach, or a better pizza maker?
Wow. That's a tough question. He excels in all three areas.
Okay.
You know, fantastic coach. I mean, you know, one of the best motivators I've ever seen.
Three Catholic League championships in a row, right? At Fenwick?
I think it was five.
Five?
Yeah, I think it was five. But yeah, and they got downstate and to the finals that one year. That was so exciting. They had a great squad. And one of his former kids just signed with Duke.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, he's going to start be at Duke next year. So, yeah, he had a great run in the Catholic League. And before that at New Trier and then at Loyola University for a couple of years with Porter Mosier.
Right, yeah.
But he was a great player as well. And, you know, he's 4 years younger, and so he learned by playing with me and my friends out in the front yard. And every time, you know, he'd go up for a layup, I'd, you know, he'd get around me so easy, I'd just come from behind and just deck him into the bushes. And he just
That's
got
what brothers
tough.
Do.
He got tougher.
Right.
You know, that's, I like to think I was a part of that.
No, it really.
But he's a great pizza maker as well.
Is he?
Except he wears glasses now, and so they're down at the tip of his nose, and he has a little more trouble reading the tickets.
I love this. Well, let's bring up your brother. He's on the phone with us, Rick Malnati. You're on with Mark Malnati. Rick, how are you, Coach?
I'm doing good, but I got a good mention on the athletic front, but I don't think he pubbed me up enough on the pizza front.
you know, I think you're a has-been in the pizza front.
Yeah,
you
know what
good.
It's like being the younger brother, Pete, is, you know, he's out looking for new places, and I'm down in the basement of restaurants making pizzas all the time. So the younger brother loses when it comes to the pizza, you know, positioning.
As it should be.
Of course.
Exactly.
Rick, I grew up in Peoria, so I remember you playing for Dick Versace at Bradley University. And Mark brought up the fact that you'd go up for a layup and, you know, he'd knock you around. You were kind of an enforcer. You were a three-point threat back in college, but you were an enforcer, too.
Yeah, lucky the three-point line wasn't around. I was Dick Versace didn't let me shoot much, so But, you know, I did get in a couple fights, and that was probably all because I was always playing with my brother and his friends, and they were beating the crap out of me.
Yeah, but Rick, I remember Rick guarding the likes of Mark Aguirre and Larry Bird. I mean, back in the, you know, back in the day. I mean, didn't,
right.
didn't you hold Larry Bird to 47 one night, Rick?
Yeah, I think it was 48. I think it was 48. Me and Larry combined for 48. He had 47. I had one.
I remember going to a game at the Bradley Fieldhouse in 79, and I think you double-teamed. I don't know if it was you, but Bird was double-teamed the entire time that year. That was the year they went to the national championship against Magic.
Yeah, it was the Birdcage defense. Most of the time it was Carl Maniscalco and Harold McMath, you know, double teaming. And so we were playing four against three. And I think we kept it close. You know, they wound up beating us pretty good. But I think in that time, you know, Bradley wasn't getting too much publicity. I think Versace just wanted to get our name out there by holding. Bird touched the ball twice and he scored 4 points. But he didn't touch the ball much the whole game.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Mark. Didn't you open a Lou Malnati's in Peoria while he was at Bradley?
Well, it might have been better if we did it while he was at Bradley so he could have spent a little more time in the kitchen. But it was about 5 years after he left Bradley. So, it went all right for a little while, and then we had some labor issues.
Labor issues in Peoria. Of course you did. Yeah, that's rough stuff.
Peoria's a great town, though.
Rick, Mark is here because this guy is hands-on. You're opening a restaurant. Lou Malnati's opening a restaurant in the Wrigley Building. You know, you have iconic Chicago, Lou Malnati's Pizza. You have the iconic Wrigley Building. Are we going to see Mark, are we going to see Rick working next week? Is he going to come by? Because he's semi-retired right now.
Working on the golf game.
Yeah, right. But, as long as it's still sunny out, I'm sure he's going to be on the practice range.
They don't let me in the kitchen much. I think Mark mentioned that it's hard to see those tickets, and instead of me teaching guys, they're teaching me, and I just get in the way.
He is, isn't he? Yeah. Rick, thank you for calling, man. It's great to have you on.
Yeah, great to talk to you, and I know my brother was pumping me up as far as being a coach, but he's quite the leader himself. He's done an unbelievable job at Malnati's, and getting us to 50 years is quite an accomplishment.
Well, thank you, brother. Have a great day.
Thank you, brother.
Okay, take care.
All right. That is Rick Malnati, your brother. That's pretty cool.
That was
cool. Yeah. I love the buildup, though, not knowing that your brother was on the phone. That is good stuff right there.
Well, he's the best.
How many restaurants do you have now? How many Lou Malnati's in the area?
I was hoping you weren't going to ask me that.
I mean, over 45, easily over 45, right?
You know what? All I know is we have a brand new one opening at the corner of Michigan and the river.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, our newest neighborhood place is going to be here to serve you. And that's all I can count to right now, one.
Well, here's a question for a restaurant owner. How do you keep the quality so high at every single restaurant? Because you go to Lou Malnati's, you get the same great taste. My Lou's is in Lincoln Square on the corner of Lincoln and Montrose. I've been there probably a million times with no less than four kids, okay? How do you keep the same quality at every restaurant?
Well, we work really hard at it. I mean, we send Jimmy D'Angelo, our COO, and a team of guys out to California every year to inspect tomatoes and stand there and wait until the tomatoes are at their zenith, the reddest, the sweetest, the just most pungent they could be. And then they'll say, okay, go. And can those perfect tomatoes, perfect taste, perfect everything, can those for the year for us. And they'll make sure they're excellent. We have a little dairy up in Wisconsin that we've been using for, our entire existence. And they do it kind of the old world way. You know, it's not a computer generated cheese. It's a cheese that human beings are touching and feeling and
right.
And making sure it comes, to perfection. We're up there, looking at that all the time. So we are on top of our product, and then in-house we have a whole team of guys led by my partner Pedro Barrera, who is are in the stores every day training, making sure, retraining, and making sure that the dough is coming out perfect in every store.
Right.
And we make, I mean, our product is house-made in each store each day, every part of it. We don't use a commissary because I don't want food coming back to the kitchen and the chefs going, ah, you know, they didn't eat it? Yeah, well, we didn't make it. It came out of the commissary. I want people taking 100% responsibility.
Right,
and,
yeah.
And they do. They, you know, we make everything in-house fresh every day. It's, you know, it's the only way to do it.
Well, that's why you've lasted 50 years. I mean, this is just fantastic. I love the fact that you're going to be a block and a half away from the radio station. This is awesome.
I do, too.
I feel like now that we've seen each other face-to-face for the first time ever, since you've been on the phone probably a half a dozen times, we've become fast friends.
All right.
That's nice.
I love that.
Mark Malnati, thank you for coming in. Congrats on the new location. Tuesday at 4 p.m.
That's right.
In the Wrigley Building, it opens up, and I'll be over there. I'll stop by.
Love to see you.
Thank you for coming in. That's Mark Malnati, everybody. It's 720 WGN. Pete McMurray in for John Williams in the Skyline Studios, 18th floor at 303 East Wacker. You look out the window and you see thousands of people walking around downtown because the marathon is happening tomorrow. And let's bring up our old friend, the executive director. It is Kerry Pinkowski. I need to wish you a congratulations. This is your 30th year, is that right?
That's correct, Pete. 30 years. It doesn't seem like it, but it is. It was pointed out a couple of weeks ago. So there's been a little bit of celebration. So, but also everybody realizes how old I am, too. So that's that's the drawback.
30 years ago. I mean, how many people were in the race 30 years ago? How many runners did you have, Kerry?
Oh, wow. I want to say we had maybe 5,500 finishers or so. So it was really a local event. We ran most of it up and down Lakeshore Drive. So we've been very fortunate. The demand and popularity has been amazing.
And how many runners do we have this year in 2019?
We're going to have a little over 45,000 runners that will start tomorrow in Grant Park for the 42nd running of the Bank of America Chicago Marathon. Those runners represent all 50 states and over 111 countries. So it is a national and international event. It's something that will give us an opportunity to really showcase the city, and it looks like even Mother Nature is cooperating, so we're going to have a great day.
Well, tomorrow's going to be a perfect day for runners, right? It's going to be nice and cool. I mean, we've had so many years where it just seems too hot in that year that we had to cancel, but tomorrow, perfect if you're a runner.
Well, you know, cool weather, I think, is the best. I mean, if I'm going to go out and run, I like it a little bit cooler. We're watching the wind. We're cognizant of that. But I spent this morning with Paula Radcliffe, who is set the world record and our reigning course record and event record holder. And she said, this is just like the day that I broke the record. It's going to be like the day I broke the record. So it didn't seem to slow her down too much. And the way the course is designed, you know, we go north and go south and west. So if there's a predominant wind, you may run into it for a little bit, and then it may push you just as much, you know. So if it's we're hoping that the wind is down and we have a great day.
I've only run in 5Ks. There's no way I could do a marathon because my body would fall apart. But I see the runners downtown when I was pulling in this morning around 8:30. I saw the runners, and I started to get this little excitement. I mean, you get a little pit and an excitement in your stomach because you can't wait for race day. Tell me about when you wake up tomorrow morning. What time do you wake up, and tell me how excited you are to get to that start line?
Well, as a participant, I think there's nothing, you know, that's casual about or impromptu about the marathon. In most cases, our participants have prepared for 18, 20 weeks and really focused on this. So it's the culmination of not only the training that's gone into it, but, you know, navigating around your work life or your family life and the soccer games and the wedding receptions and all that stuff and getting your runs in. So, you know, I think there's a great deal of anticipation to get on with it and to test yourself. We have a lot of our participants that are first-time marathon runners, so just the energy and the vibe.
Right.
And it all goes back to this individual expression. I mean, it creates a community of everybody that has the task at hand and they're all in it. And, you know, with our residents and volunteers and local businesses all come out, it's just an amazing morning.
We're talking with Kerry Pinkowski, the executive director of the Bank of America Chicago Marathon. Joe Brand, you got a question for Kerry?
Yeah, it's funny you bring up there's nothing casual about the Chicago Marathon, but I dub myself a casual fan. I will go and watch and cheer on everyone who's going through it. I want to know, though, what makes the Chicago Marathon different from other marathons? What makes it unique?
Well, I think if you compare it to the Boston Marathon, for example, you go out to Hopkinton, you go out 26.2 miles to Hopkinton, and then you run into Boston. You know, we use Grant Park as our start and finish area, so it brings a convenience and factor to our participants, where the majority of our participants are either have taken public transportation or park, or the majority of them are in the hotel, so it's an easy little commute to get to the start. And then the fact that it's a loop course and technical analysis of it, but accessible to friends and family members. You can get to different locations. The CTA has been a great partner. We have tons of people that buy a day pass, and they may go up north and then come back down at the halfway point, or go over, you know, on the west side, and or down by, you know, IIT and catch them at different locations and come back and celebrate at our Runner Reunite area in Grant Park. So I think the accessibility and the way public transportation and the L system works is a great asset, and it creates a great adventure for friends and family members.
Okay, so you bring up the Boston Marathon. I've had this idea. I want to run it by you. So the Boston Marathon is Patriots Day, right? And they have the Red Sox game during the day, and it's the only day baseball game throughout Major League Baseball. I want a Chicago holiday, just a Chicago holiday. Now, this would entail moving the Chicago Marathon, but let's do a Cubs let's do a Cubs Sox doubleheader, venues, Wrigley at day, Guaranteed Rate Field at night, and squeeze in the Chicago Marathon. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm a lifelong Sox fan, so if we can do something with the Sox, that's great. Just kidding. And the Cubs are great. That's a great idea. Let me bring that to the traffic managers and OEMC and see what they think. Maybe
Stop
you can come
it.
In and present.
Okay.
Stop
well,
it.
Well, maybe just the Bears, but a Chicago holiday.
Please.
How cool would it have to just have a Chicago holiday?
I don't think you can move the marathon, Kerry, can you? Because it's, first of all, number one, it's going to be too warm if you move it to baseball season, especially in September.
Well, you know, that's a great concept, and the Boston Red Sox and the Boston Marathon have coexisted for a long time, and that's a great, you know, the Red Sox, they start early. I think they start the game at 11 o'clock, and everybody comes out and cheers for the marathon. So
right.
that's a wonderful tradition. I'll have to think about that a little bit.
Well, how about the Bears?
I'll tell you how it would work. Is, and I'll give you an example. The White Sox were, in 2005, the White Sox were playing the Red Sox in the American League Championship, and we run by Guaranteed Rate Field, and the challenge was there was a possibility that the Sox would play with the Red Sox, but the White Sox took care of business and swept the Red Sox in four games, so there was no conflict. So they came through. But, you know, you're talking about scheduling all the pieces that go into it. One of our greatest partners for all the 30 years that I've done this is the Chicago Bears. They have been amazing with scheduling and support of the event. They have a bye this week, obviously. But, you know, when you go back all the years of the event, we're talking about these other iconic franchises in sports. The Bears have been there from the beginning with me. We wouldn't be where we are today if it wasn't for the support of Chicago Bears, Soldier Field, obviously the city of Chicago. So, but I like that. If we need some postseason play from either the north side or the south side, then we'll think about it.
The Sox make the playoffs, Joe. Then it can coincide with the Chicago Marathon.
All right, let's do it.
The marathon brings in about $340 million to the city. Is that right, Kerry?
What we do is we commission an economic impact study, and in 2018 it was $378 million to the local economy, which is fantastic.
That's just crazy. $378 million. Okay, there's people right now that have never, ever been to the marathon, and they're thinking about it. The Bears have a bye tomorrow. Where are the best places to watch the runners? You mentioned the halfway point. Where would that be? Give us a few locations.
That's right downtown in the Loop and off of Harrison. I mean, the best thing, guys, is just to go to our website, chicagomarathon.com. There's spectator information in there. There's a spectator guide where you can – the best way to get around on public transportation. If you live up north, Sheridan Road is a great spot. You can park a little bit north and walk down. But also, if you're really adventurous, you know, you can go to our website and look at those different locations. There's information about what trains to get on and where you want to go.
Oh, nice.
And the beauty of this is you can also just discover some of these great neighborhoods, too. I mean, we have a lot of people that come down, and they watch the marathon, and then they go have lunch. They have a couple of drinks, you know, and it makes for a great day.
That is the best thing you guys did is you started advertising the Chicago Marathon running through the neighborhood. So it just gives it a more personal Chicago feel. I love that. That's what I love.
Awesome. Well, maybe next year, 2020, we'll see. Maybe just think we got plenty of time to train, a whole year. So
I like to be at the halfway point, and then I like to be at the finish line where there's beer. That's where I'll be. I can do that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, one of the things I was talking to a group this morning, and we have a wonderful partnership with Goose Island, which is very Chicago centric, and they made a Chicago beer for us. So we'll have we'll have Goose Island beer. At the finish line, we'll have 45,000 cans of Goose Island beer that has our custom labeling, and it's a commemorative can. So maybe that might motivate you guys a little bit. 26.2 miles, and you get a can of beer. You know, how does that sound?
Kerry, you're the best, man. Congrats.
Hey, Pete, thanks for having me on, and thanks for all the support over the years. You guys have been great. Appreciate it.
All right, that is Kerry Pinkowski, the Executive Race Director of the Bank of America Chicago Marathon. Pete McMurray in for John Williams in the Skyline Studios. John's hanging out with Teddy Roosevelt today. He'll be back next Saturday. Thanks again to Kerry Pinkowski, the Executive Race Director of the Bank of America Chicago Marathon. I'm at their website right now, chicagomarathon.com. It does give you all the information. I'm thinking the halfway point. If you were down there, my sister-in-law ran in the marathon a few years ago, and it really is a cool thing to see at least once in your life. I mean, just we were at the finish line and just the emotion. I mean, these people train for months and just they're crying and hugging each other. It's a very cool thing to see. And they have beer at the end of the race, which is just wonderful. It really is.
I just think it's a very huge personal accomplishment. Like you say, they train for so long. You're battling things emotionally, mentally, physically, and then it just comes all to fruition where most of your friends and family are. And then, oh, yeah, there's beer, like you said.
I've had 5 knee operations. I can never run in a Chicago marathon, but I've done 5Ks. I did one this summer. I can do 5Ks.
5Ks are fun.
Because they have beer at the end. That's my motivation. I'm not going to lie. I love to have a beer at the end of a race. Absolutely, I do.
Have you ever done the Dicka Dash?
No. What is that?
It's where everybody dresses up like Mike Dicka.
Right. Coach. Yeah.
And I did it a few years ago, and he's just at the start line, and every 5 minutes or so, a huge barrage of people go through, and Dicka just takes a cigar out, goes, "All right, you ready?" Blows the air horn, sits back down. My buddy goes, "He's probably like, you're going to pay me how much money to do what?"
Right, exactly.
It was a blast. That was a fun time.
Did you have the fake mustache on? And
they give out those. This was a couple years ago. I don't know if they still keep up with it, but they give out those. They give out aviator sunglasses and T-shirts that look like a shirt and tie.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, it was cool. It was a fun time.
So you didn't have to wear the sweater vest.
No,
you don't the race.
You don't have to go full on Ditka with an actual shirt, tie, and the Bears sweater.
No, but some do.
Yeah, some do.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing with 5Ks. You could treat it like Halloween. You can dress however you want.
Right. I've done the Presidential Towers run that we do here.
Oh, I did that last year.
Well, the firefighters dress in the full gear. Can you imagine running up 4 flights of stairs in 4 different towers at Presidential Towers in full gear?
And that's what they do for their job, too.
Wow. And they had the tanks. That's insane. Ben, do you run? You're not a runner.
I'm not a runner.
No. You're not a
runner. I can sprint. I can
run from the cops. Pete. but no. Listen, running stinks. It's terrible. I hate it, but it's the only way that I could lose weight. And then I found out if you do these 5Ks, especially in Lincoln Park, they have beer at the end. So it becomes a family affair and you can hang out. It becomes an event. I mean, you can walk.
I'll be on the guy on the
3 miles of 5K.
Yeah, I'll be the guy on the moped next to him, handing him the water, like they do on the bike.
And the moped's going faster.
Yep.
There is nothing better. What was the race I did this summer? We ran right along the lake. It was wonderful. I mean, I can't imagine being a runner in the Chicago Marathon and just looking at the skyline and the crisp Chicago morning and people are cheering you on. I understand it's 26 miles. I couldn't, the most that I've ever run in a race was 6 miles. I can't imagine getting to mile 10 and thinking, oh my God, I got 16 more miles to go.
What was that? Did you do a 10K?
Yeah, I did the Crazy Legs in Madison, Wisconsin, where you start and you run through the campus, and the finish line is the 50-yard line. And wow. as you pass the 50-yard line, they hand you a beer, and the band plays. I'm not kidding. It's the greatest race ever. You're on Camp Randall drinking a beer with the Wisconsin band playing. My wife's a UW graduate, and we did that a few years. It's great.
Do all these races end with beer? I mean,
do you understand my motivation in life? I'm a dad. I'm running around. My wife works. I work. It's tough. If I can have a brewski on the weekends after exercising, absolutely, I'll do it.
Isn't that your favorite thing to do, is have a beer after you mow the lawn? I feel like I've heard you say that before.
I live in the city, so if you're listening right now, my lawn is the size of your master bath. But yes, I mow my lawn, and I like to stare at it when I'm done.
Well, time to mow the lawn again today.
And you have to mow and you have to edge. It's all about the edging, man. It's got to be a perfect square, and then you stare at it. That's normal. You guys don't do that?
I can't wait to grow
up. I do.
Yeah.
It is. It's going to be great. But the Chicago Marathon, Kerry said, and this is just crazy, it generates $378 million for the city of Chicago. So think about all these people coming from 50 states and how many countries, he said. They're all coming to Chicago, and they're spending money in our city. Yeah. Where that money goes, we're not quite sure. But they're spending money in the city. That should help us on the back end, right? Maybe not.
I feel like that money's going towards beer.
Well, let's hope. Coming up after the top of the hour, has anybody ever had their identity stolen? I'm hosting the Wintrust Business Lunch today, by the way. We're going to have Ryan O'Halloran from, he's the Chief Technology Officer at Access One. It's a cybersecurity company. I had someone use my social security number for tax return, try to get some money. And you want to talk about the worst thing on the planet. It was horrible. Having to deal with the IRS, and now every time I file my taxes, I have to have a PIN number. It's horrendous. So Ryan's going to talk about what we need to do as individuals and what we need to do as businesses to protect ourselves. Anybody? You've ever had?
I haven't. I've had family members have to deal with it.
How long did it take him to get out of it?
It's still ongoing. Like, I mean, not extensively long. It's been
it follows
the last 3 months,
you
but,
forever.
Yeah,
Joe
yeah.
Brand.
I think I was briefly stolen from my identity, but it quickly got resolved. And I think it was my fault too.
What do you mean?
I purchased something online from a shady website, and the next day, maybe the next couple of days, I get a fraud alert, and then they took out like $40 and just quickly got it back.
So it was a credit card thing?
Yes.
They didn't actually steal the identity?
Yeah, I guess I totally misinterpreted what you said. I've never had my identity stolen.
How many times have you had a credit card or a fraud thing, you get the notice and you have to cancel your credit card? I feel like that easily happens to me once a year.
That I've had happen.
Easily,
yeah.
Once a year. Or if someone's taking money out of or trying to get money out of an ATM. Yeah, easily. So we'll talk to Ryan O'Halloran, the CTO at Access One, in the Wintrust Business Lunch coming up. It's 720 WGN.